All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Lawn Care Leaders Podcast. I'm your show host, Britt Dowd. Super excited about today. I am joined by a fellow Kansas, Grant Raridan, out of McPherson, Kansas. Grant, how you doing, boss? Did I say your last name right?
It's like a rare done steak.
A rare done steak. I love it. I love it. I like my Grant rare done. Nothing more, nothing less. How you doing today, boss?
Living another day in God's country, so doing well.
Oh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah. It really is fun. Like I told you off air, it's cool to dial up a Kansas number. Hopefully I get to meet you in person. This will be a lot of fun. So Grant runs McPherson Turf Care, 3 years in business, my friend. Why don't you tell everybody, like, give us a little elevator speech, what you're about, how you got into the business, talk about your family. Everybody always skips over the personal life stuff too, but I want to know that too. Like, are you married? Do you have kids? Give us the pulse of everything if you can.
Sure. So yeah, like you said, McPherson Turf Care. This is year three of operation. Year one of full time operation. First two were part time, but we are more or less a full service lawn care and landscaping company. You know, our deal client is where we can come in and take care of everything: mowing, spraying, fertilization, overseeding your landscape beds, mulch, whatever you need in the outdoors of your home. I mean, we've done hardscape, whatever it is to create your dream lawn, we want to help.
Cool.
So we try to find a way to do that.
Yeah.
At times it's awesome because you can really have a chance to create something beautiful. And other times it's incredibly frustrating because there's like 8 different businesses that you need to run as one. You know, when you dial in on one field, a lot of transition time. But we've been very blessed to be in a nice small community where, you know, knowing somebody is everything, and it's small enough, you can get to know everybody. That's what I love about Kansas, is it's just small population numbers, but big community. Yeah. So it's a good place for a small business to be at.
That's cool, man. So it sounds like you've got quite a good client base, right? I think you have 100 clients, and so you're one stop shop. Like you said, you're wearing a lot of hats whenever you're a one stop shop company. So, are you married? Do you have kids?
So married, to my wife Kristen, 4 years, I believe. We don't have any kids. We've been trying for probably just as long. So, you are prayer warriors out there.
That's awesome.
We've been trying to navigate that field, but we've got a dog and 2 cats that keep us well loved.
So you've been three years in lawn care, 1 year full time with that, 4 years married. I'm assuming all those 4 years you were full time married.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was a bad dad joke. I apologize for that. Cool, man. So, okay, we've got a little feel for what you do. How did you wind up getting into the lawn care industry?
So I kind of always leaned towards it growing up. I look back in my life, like I tried to mow my neighbor's yards and whatnot, but it was never anything serious. Until about college, I started working at a golf course over the summers. And it wasn't like I was taking it serious to work there. I just got a job there, but I mean, was introduced to the mowing, you know, nice golf course maintenance side of stuff. Spraying. So left there, didn't really think much about it. It was all about sports. And so went through college, graduated, sports wasn't a career, needed something to do. And an opportunity came up to run a business for my college in Kansas, called Two Tigers in a Truck, and based after Two Men in a Truck, the moving company. So we tried to be really anything. I mean, our motto was your need is our service. So we would do anything anybody would ask us to do. And realizing the same problems of doing that, we tried to dial in on our most popular services in town.
Yeah.
One was really lawn care, and the other one was moving. So me and my best friend, we were running it together, the whole thing. So we decided, all right, I'll take lawn care, and he could take moving. So he ran with that, and I got into the lawn care side and picked up my applicator's license and started learning more about it and enjoying it, and just realized, well, hey, if you could make a career out of this, take it serious, you could have a life that would be nice.
Yeah.
So yeah. I did, and what, 3-4 years down the road, now I've got that business is no longer around, but my own business, and I just enjoy it. It's a good field.
Yep.
You know, it's probably a lot of the same reasons you enjoy it. It's just, it's a nice way to earn a living.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, take a dude. That is really cool, man. And this is what I love about everybody's story. Like you come into the industry a different way. And then as you first get started, it seems like even though it could be similar, there's all these little nuances. So take us back to a couple of those days. Like, what was that like? Two tigers in a truck. I can only imagine like the brand, like, misconceptions, like, have you called two cougars in a truck yet? Or
well, the best part.
What was the weirdest call you got to? Tell your story, but I want to know the weirdest call you got.
Well, we'll start with a funny story. Like my first weekend, our only vehicle was this like 1980s white van that you would imagine Free Candy on the side with. It looked like that, and so I was like, well, we got to brand ourselves, so we need to put a tiger face on the front of this van. So I went to Walmart, grabbed some spray paint, and spray painted the hood orange, and then put some tiger stripes in it. And then on the side, I was like, well, we need to have our name. So I grabbed a bunch of cardboard and a utility knife and carved out two tigers in a truck, two, and our phone number. But it was awful. I mean, the letters were jaggedy, and I spray painted that onto the side. And went around town with this not very appropriate looking van asking for.
My gosh. Did people, I can only imagine. Like, did you get pulled over? Like, did the cops ever pull you over? Like, hey, like, are you dealing drugs? Like, are you offering certain favors out of this cougar van? Like, what is going on here?
I got pulled over the very first day of work for the tags were expired on the license plate. They had let them expire, so I took over and I go, okay, well, I guess that's not a big deal. And then they go, well, give us your license. I had lost my license while driving across the country, so I had no license. So we just had to leave this sketchy looking van on Main Street for a day or two so we could straighten it out. It was very, like, I mean, they had good and bad press about this van. Got made fun of quite heavily for it.
Okay. And do you have some really good pictures of this van? I'm gonna have to have this to promote the podcast.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my old Instagram account, Two Tigers in a Truck, is still out there, and there's definitely pictures on it.
Dude, have you checked it recently? Because after the Tiger King series, that thing might have like 1.2 million followers.
Probably does.
Oh man, just a few years late on the branding play. You would have had some people calling you just purely out of that, just purely out of interest. Oh man. Yeah. Okay, so I've got to know more. I know we've sat here for a second, but tell me, like, what was you're in this white van that you've spray painted the logo on the side. You've got these janky tiger stripes on the front, and you guys are just telling people, we'll literally do anything for you. Tell me what was the weirdest call? I still got to know.
You know, as many times as people ask, there's not necessarily weird calls, but there's like you'd work for the city where you'd have a lot that's abandoned and, you know, it hasn't been touched in a month, two months, 3 months, and they need it cut back down. So we get that call a lot. Normally it's not too bad.
Yeah.
But we walk into this one and it was a forest, I mean, residential downtown suburbia, but a forest. And you had to clear this whole thing down with like a machete. And it was we were so underprepared for everything, but you'd find a way to get it done, or you'd go and do a massive move. The weird ones on moves where you find inappropriate things that you shouldn't be seeing, but you're moving all of these people's personal belongings, and then you have to finish this move. And like, do we say something to them? Do we say something to who?
Who do we say? What do I do with this right here? Yeah.
And then, you know, they're going to know you moved it.
So, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Weird things, or weird people. I mean, I hate to call people weird, but you dealt with anybody So you'd just have scary situations where you'd have to have the cops come out and escort you around on the property while you move something or got something for somebody.
Wow. They
need their pantries cleared out. So we'd come in and, you know, a little caller, a little old lady, but hey, you know, she just needed to clean her shelves in her pantry. So she wanted to do that, but she needed them cleared. So, all right, we'll take your cans off your shelves and come back when you need it. I need this chair moved from this side of the room to the other side of the room.
This may be the most fun I've had on the introduction to a podcast. This is amazing, man. And it does take me back to some of my early days. I've cleaned out garages and done all sorts of weird stuff. Did you get anything cool just like given to you, or somebody was throwing something out?
Oh, we furnished our entire houses. Me and my buddy, we didn't buy anything.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, we had air mattresses with the, you know, the Tempur-Pedic with the pump stuff, mm-hmm. your television, mm-hmm. computers. Because people, you just junk haul off. I mean, removals.
Yep.
I mean, I found like a 5 terabyte in the box used hard drive or never been used hard drive. And I was like, holy crap. They're just going to throw this away.
Yep.
I'm taking this home.
Yep. That's awesome.
It was a nice, but it's all kind of junk. So now I take my nicer stuff.
I mean, if you're single and you're in college,
yeah,
I mean,
that's amazing. Jackpot.
One of the guys that works for me, he worked for a moving company. He told me the same thing. He's like, yeah, man, I found a couch. I think he found like a nice like Tempur-Pedic bed that somebody was just throwing mm-hmm. out. And then he's got like two like ninja swords, and he was like, yeah, and they're actually sharp. And I'm like, dude, we've got to use these things. I want to go all like stepbrothers on it and start cutting mm-hmm. watermelons in half. All right, man, that's 12 minutes of not lawn care.
It's this service. I mean, you have to, if you're in the industry, you have to be willing to do whatever anybody's going to ask you to do.
Yeah.
And then you find out what pays the best.
Two.
And then you do that. I mean, you really got to start out and
just hustle.
Grind.
Yeah.
Be willing to do anything.
Two Tiger Kings and a creeper van. All right, yep. Man. So what next? So that gave us the beginning, like literally the best beginning to an episode ever. This is great. Well, we know where you've been. Where are you now, and where are you going? Where is Grant heading with McPherson Turf Care?
So we're hoping to bring on, for me, the growth plan would be bringing on employees. You know, to do this by yourself is great. To provide an income for yourself is great. But to be able to get together with a collective group of individuals and together provide income for not only yourselves, but also, you know, you're serving your community, you're building families, you're building value together as a group. So, you know, we've got people in places that aren't the right places that need to come over, and we're just waiting on certain things. If we can bring on the right people, we can build the company for them,
yeah.
in a sense,
yeah.
you know, based around the services that we're offering, because we do offer a wider range of services. You can pretty much find anybody's strength anywhere from an employee standpoint. It's not, okay, we're only going to go out and mow. Well, this guy's terrible at mowing, but he's great at spraying. Well, now we'd have to lose him. So, well, yeah. No, he'll just spray. Sort of not rocket science. But getting the business built to a point, to a clientele level where we can support, you know, employee full-time number two, then
cool.
X, Y, and Z from there to.
And so you feel like that is your only limiting growth factor right now, because it seems like you can get the work. You're just looking for that first right hire, correct?
Well, it's yes. Short answer. Yeah. I mean, if you had more work, more people, you could do more, but it's also more efficient ways to do things on a solo basis, getting the right equipment in place. Because if you can build a very successful business based off of just me solo, then bringing on somebody else, you have it built for them already. You're not trying to figure it out for them.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit cheaper not to have employees. don't make as much, but I mean, if I can do it right now more efficiently solo, next year bring on people at a more efficient rate, and take on more, and I can help out in other places and build, I mean, stuff you're familiar with, but yeah. And we've got those people in place. It's just a lot of it's timing.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, and so it sounds like you're kind of in that position where you're trying to increase your top line. As you know, it's inevitable. You're getting ready to hire somebody. So you're just increasing efficiency, putting all those pieces in place, and then increasing revenue. Just kind of get all the
system. Getting your numbers right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Figuring out your costs for everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the biggest eye opener going full time was the amount of overhead just to have full-time employees and yourself is astronomical just before you even start paying yourself, just to have an employee.
Yep. Yep.
And then to have two and three and the support system to support all of them. It's like, holy cow.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
You applaud the people that are doing it at 200.
Yeah.
It's
a big jump. It's a big jump. Well, tell me, yeah. I know we wanted to talk about this for sure, about like, you know, how you're treating your employees and the value of your employees. So why don't you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. And that goes with the growth factors, needing to be a business that can take care of the employee plus whoever they are responsible for taking care of. You need to be a business that, if you want A-level talent, provides a better opportunity than anybody. And that's not just from, you know, finances or healthcare, but also how they're treated and their, you know, career advancement, their appreciation, because, and this is what we talked to a little bit beforehand, like those employees are not there to just get a paycheck. I mean, they're spending years of their lives potentially working towards a cause. And if you can create an environment where they feel like their time that they're never getting back, potentially, you know, their 20s or their 30s working towards something, and they feel immense reward from that, and they feel like, yes, I can spend my time here, they'll never leave. They'll just stay and be the best employees you can ever have. But I see places all over the time, and in my personal, I've had experiences where you don't feel that way as an employee. You know, you're just there.
Yeah.
And it's not difficult to do that.
Yeah. And like, I like where you're tracking here, because, you know, time is the most precious asset we have, and we can never get it back. So I think it's good for us as business owners to take a step back, do a little reflection, put ourselves in the shoes of people coming into our company and realize, like, hey, we do have a pretty enormous responsibility to care for this person properly. You know, we can't just look at that person as a pawn on the board of our business game. You know, we're not just moving them around to maximize profit for ourselves. Now, one of the benefits of business is, yeah, when you bring people on board and they're efficient, they're obviously going to be producing income at a greater level than you were before. Like, that's the goal. Like, that's obvious. And you want to maximize profit to better your life and theirs. But I think it's good to just take a little reset, or, you know, kind of retool the way we think for a second and look at it from their perspective. You know, they're coming in here, they don't know what's going on. The other thing that I've noticed is they have like preconceived notions of what a job is. I myself have seen this so many times in our company where a guy has a job prior and he just thinks that's the way it is, that's the way it's always been, and that's the way it's always going to be. And so they come in and you almost have to just like clear the dust off a little bit and let them shine through for a little bit and be like, no, that's not the way it is here. And they won't
just set expectations.
Yeah. Set the expectations, and they won't believe you for the first 3 months. Mm-hmm. They won't believe you. They'll just be like, oh, he's just putting on a front. But day after day, month after month, they'll be like, okay, this place is different. You know, I can feel they truly care about me. And I hope that's where you were tracking with that. Am I on point, Grant?
Yeah, and the flip side to it is to acknowledge that they don't have to be there, and it's not bad if they aren't. you know, that's their time. And if they decide this isn't right, I'm going to leave, like whatever that might be.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yep. Yep.
So when you do have their time, value it that much more, knowing they don't owe you anything, being you, your employee.
Yeah.
If anything, you owe them a paycheck.
Yep.
Hopefully an appropriately sized one.
Yep. Yep.
In exchange for the goods and services that they'll give. But, and if that doesn't all work out, hey, cool.
Yep.
Just don't waste each other's time. Time is way too valuable to waste.
Yep. Yep.
And to underappreciate.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
other people.
That's awesome.
In my opinion.
No, that's
my
good. One life. No, I love it, man. I love it. Everybody's perspective is important. And I think a lot of people are getting value out of this already. So you still have some pretty cool perspective on going from part-time to full-time.
During a pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. So what have been those pain points that you're working on right now?
The biggest eye-opener I had in the last, 2 weeks was pricing.
Yeah.
I could get by with much lower prices when I was part-time. And now that we're full-time bringing on employees, going, why does it feel like we're working at 100 miles an hour, but just dragging our feet when it comes to collecting, profiting? You know, it just doesn't feel like it's matching up. And then redoing the numbers literally about 2 weeks ago and asking a friend who's also a competitor / he just owns another business in town, their pricing. And I was way off.
Yeah.
Going, holy cow. And I just recently raised my prices to where they're very much more competitive now, going, okay, yeah, that makes me feel comfortable now, knowing that I can hopefully afford the winter on these prices. Whereas before, you just don't, with not a lot of snow, I mean, there's not a lot of income here.
So let's dig into that a little bit. What were the prices you were having issues on? Because I have a call with a guy, with part of our Intentional Growth Advisors group. We're going to be going over pricing with him. Walk me through, what were you struggling on pricing? And then whenever you realized, okay, I have a problem, now I need to fix it, what would you say, was it simply reaching out to people in your market and realizing, hey, I can charge more? Or did you start to look at your numbers and say, okay, no, I'm actually only making this net margin? Walk me through that process, because I would love to hear it, and I think it will help a lot of our listeners.
Sure. So it was mainly on my lawn application side. The best thing that I could ever give anybody advice, and you using Jobber, LMN has that, but has a free budgeting program where you put in all your information and it tells you your value you need to charge per man hour. And so that was number one, was going through that, filling it all out and going, oh, I need to charge a lot more if I want to cover stuff and actually make a profit.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was the first change. But then I just kept feeling like on spraying, when it came to, we're mainly liquid. So when it came to spraying, I felt like I was just barely making enough. I felt like I was doing the numbers on what the products cost and how much product I was using per lawn. I was like, really just isn't much profit here.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could charge more. And I kept hearing some of our clients came from competitors because our prices were just so low compared to them. And I'm going, well, man, maybe they're doing something I'm not supposed to, or maybe they're charging so much more. And then they started buying all these new toys. And I'm like, man, no wonder they can, because they're charging enough. I want to buy some of these toys. But I need to be making enough. And so then I went back through and just really went over every product that we use, our recipes, how much they cost per thousand, how much, I was charging a house based off of how much material we were just using, going, wow, that's not enough.
Yeah.
If I want to, I saw one comment on Facebook where some guy made a comment where he was like, I'm charging $700 or $800 an acre. And I was like, holy cow, that is so much money. What would that be in my market? And so I started breaking that down and going, well, I dialed it down to $400 an acre. I was like, I think I could maybe get these prices. And just yesterday I had a conversation with my friend competitor, and we asked each other what we charged for the same square footage, and we were close. So okay. Oh, okay. so that is a good price then. Well, I'm going to start charging. And then I raised the prices to that, and people started still accepting the bids. And I was like, well, shoot.
Yep.
If they're accepting it at this price, supply and demand, why am I accepting it at so much less?
Yep.
So that's kind of the pain point now is, do we raise prices on old customers significantly to match new prices, slowly raise them, don't raise them at all, drop them, just keep your most profitable accounts? If our mission is to be everything to everyone in the community, we have to find a way to make it work.
So
that's where we're at today.
Yep.
We need to figure out a way to make it work.
No, that's, bro, that's really good. I think that will help a lot of people just hearing kind of how you had to wrestle with that and the rawness of it. Say what?
It'll never stop. Yeah. You'll always be wrestling with it.
Yep.
And it's almost a monthly process of check your numbers.
And because your business, if your business is staying the same, you're technically going backwards. Because a business, the oxygen is cash flow. And as your business moves forward to make more cash flow, you have to expand. You have to expand expenses. You have to expand your payroll, your team's capacity, equipment. And when all of that changes, guess what happens, guys? Your pricing has to change. You can't just keep it the same. I'll say this. You can get all the work you want if you drop your prices low enough. So you have to decide if that's what you want.
You spend all your time not making money.
Yes.
Or not making enough. And so then you come back to the value of your time.
Yep.
How much is my time worth? Enough to do this cut for $30? Not anymore.
Yeah. Yep.
I'll do less work for more money and be just as happy.
Yep. And then you've got the opportunity cost of now freed up time where somebody more profitable could come in, or you'll be able to spend it on training or whatever that may be. I was just jotting down some notes here as you were chatting. So a couple things that I think is smart when you initially start your pricing search. So when you realize, oh crap, I am underpriced, I think it is good to know like what you and your family need per month to live off of. And then, and then off of that, kind of get like a general, hey, how much am I like worth per hour? So I just think that's a good reference. Like, what do I need to survive off of? That's always a good, you know, beacon way out to look at. Oh, okay, remember, I need this much to survive. The next one is you need to know the margin that you want. So if you want to hit, let's say, 20% margins this year or 30% margins this year, that is very easy to back into if you just sit down with a yellow pad and write down, what does it cost me to do a job? What is my hourly rate that I just came up with? And so now what do I need to charge the client? And
that's what that software did for me. It was phenomenal.
Yep.
I'm not good with a yellow pad.
Yep. And it comes up with your man hour rate. I love that. And then the other thing that I love that you did was you kind of looked around the market too. You know, you don't want to be the cheapest guy in town right out of the gate. So it's very smart to look around and say, okay, I see this guy over here. He's charging $45 a cut. This dude's charging $42. This guy's trying to lowball everybody at $29. But then I see him doing something else at the end of the year, trying to, you know, make up the extra lost cost. So it's never a bad idea to know where you stand with your competitors.
If you're friends with them, they don't care. I mean, you just call them up. Yeah. Hey, what are you charging? Okay, what are your profits? What is all this?
Yep. It is not.
A lot of the times they like to talk.
Oh, yeah. It's not hard. Or people will put it on their site or, shoot, just get a quote request for your own lawn there. And then the other thing is trust and professionalism cost more. So whenever you build trust with a client and you have a relationship, or whenever you add a license or you do a really good landscaping job in the neighborhood and they know, hey, you're a professional, this guy, his quality of work is 5-star, go look at this dude in the neighborhood. Okay, whenever you do something like that, or you add value, or you now have a new license, or you can now do mosquito control, you're the only guy within 20 miles that can do mosquito. Whenever you add professionalism, all of that costs more. And then on top of that, another way is just the perception of value. We've all overpaid for something just because it had more perceived value. We've all paid for an Under Armour shirt when there was probably a shirt that was relatively similar, but it's the perceived value. And maybe that's not a perfect product analogy, but you get where I'm going. So
paying for your brand.
Yes.
Your brand value.
Yep.
If you create value in your brand.
Yep. And so if your branding is the cheapest spot in town, there's going to be no perception of value. The value is you're just cheap. It's a quick cut. You know, it might be really easy to
there's a market for that. Let them keep that market.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. Well, cool, man. Well, what else? I want to get into what you're kind of doing on the side. We had been talking earlier. You said that you've got something other than lawn care that kind of relatively ties into it, but I'm curious about that. What do you got going on?
So my wife and I started it and convinced her to work with me to start a worm farm down in our basement. And doing that because of a book I read, Teeming with Microbes, and it put me on this rabbit trail of if you could care for your soil, you could take care of your plants. And it sounds too good to be true, but it seems to be working, and it's counter to really everything I've ever been taught from a turf perspective. So we're not rolling it out full steam yet, but I mean, there's a lot of organic people out there doing lawn care, but started learning about trying to take care of grass organically. And in that stumbled into worms, because they eat compost and then they poop out castings, and those castings are supposed to be just incredibly dense in their biology, not necessarily in a nutrient sense, but quite a bit of positive soil life in their poop.
Yep.
So if you can harvest their poop, I mean, yeah, it's not new science by any means. I just thought it was super, super cool to want to try and do it. And so we bought some worms, and I've built several versions now. I think we're like 6 or 7 of how we are, and nowhere close to being perfect or operational on this scale.
Walk me through this for somebody that has no idea of this world. Are you literally harvesting the worm's poop and planning to put it out on properties? Are you putting the worms out on the property? Like, what is actually going on?
So the method that we use, we have 5-gallon buckets, and we fill them with compost. And really it's yard waste that we pull off of job sites, that I store and turn into good compost. And then we feed the worms good compost mixed with food waste. You have about 1,000, 2,000 little tiny composting worms in a bucket, 5-gallon bucket. They eat all the compost for about a month, and then they digest it, and they poop out the digested compost. Hmm. And all of the bacteria from their digestive tract is supposed to be incredibly beneficial.
Yep.
For the natural organisms or biology that's there. So you super hyperly increase your biology levels. Then what we do is this is where we're at right now, is trying to build a harvesting system at scale. We've got 3 like 55-gallon metal drums hooked up to a concrete mixer with hardware cloth, windows cut out and hardware cloth that spins. So you dump the 5-gallon bucket in one end of the barrels and out the other end. Well, as it rolls through, all the castings, they sift out. And so they get separated from all the worms and the undigested or the uneaten compost.
Oh, wow.
So then you just add new food into it, take all your worms, put them back in your bucket, and start the process back over again.
Huh.
And you have all of this fantastic casting waiting to be applied to soil.
Wow.
And anything that grows in it.
Wow. And so do you picture doing this for like a business to consumer type thing where you're doing it for residential properties, or do you think you will try to sling this out to nurseries, greenhouse people in your area?
Yes. I want to use it
all
everywhere.
All the above.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you're familiar with compost tea at all, there's a couple of guys. There's one guy, I think it's St. Louis. Yeah, St. Louis Organic Lawn Care. He's doing residential lawn care with compost tea from a fertility standpoint. It's a whole nother podcast for organics versus non-organic stuff. And there's nothing that kills a weed better than a toxic chemical.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to ever disagree with that or not use them. But, I think there's enough evidence out there to show that compost tea could be beneficial to the lawn and the soil around it to want to try it.
Yeah.
And the goal, because the amount of worm castings you have to apply to a lawn is like 10 pounds per thousand. Well, you only get like 3 or 4 pounds out of a 5-gallon bucket.
Yeah.
So you're needing a lot of material if you're talking hundreds and hundreds of clients.
Yeah.
But you only need like a pound of castings to make a good batch of tea that could cover quite a few bit of clients. So a little bit more economical from on a tea standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's all just a whole nother wheel.
Yep.
I mean, it's a whole nother distraction. It's a whole nother money pit.
Yeah. Yeah.
A whole nother awesome way to spend your time, though.
That's cool, man. That's awesome. No, I think whenever you get into any industry and then you begin to integrate things like this and your wheels are turning and you're starting new things and testing it out and you're learning, I mean, that's progress, man. Like there's nothing wrong with that at all. I know sometimes you probably feel like, oh, is this an expensive hobby or a pipe dream? But it's cool. That's really fun. So, well, cool, man. I know we've been chatting a while here now. I want to give you a chance. Is there anything that you would like to share with our listeners here as we wrap up? Anything that you've been thinking about or any last thought?
Well, fall's on its way. The cool weather is coming. If you're feeling burnt out at all, I know I've been seeing a lot of guys online saying that they're feeling the summer heat and the burnout, and myself included in that.
Yep.
And we've had kind of a false fall this week, and does kind of rejuvenate yourself. So
has it been nice out there for you guys as well?
The mornings have been downright crisp.
Oh,
I mean, over crisp.
Yep.
It's refreshing.
Oh, I know. It's kind of nice to walk out and be like, ooh, I could put a little jacket or a hoodie on or something. Yeah, fall is on its way. Everybody put your big boy pants on. Quit complaining. Yep. It's almost here. And then we'll be doing fall leaf cleanups, aerating and seeding jobs. Everybody will up north will start getting prepped for their snow plow season. So it is it's cyclical. It's gonna come. It always comes right after summer. So all right, Grant. Yep. Well, I appreciate you being here with us, and I really enjoyed our conversation, told some funny stories, gave some great insight around team members. And I hope you guys, as you move into your fourth year and your second year full time, I hope you keep killing it. Wish you the best.
Thanks, Britt. Yep. Appreciate your time and everyone listening.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yep. Bye. We'll be right back.